So, academics value, here we're getting, repeating myself. I hope the people out in the land receiving things.
Not yet.
Not yet. Oh, well, we're going to have...
Now
we have sound, perhaps? Okay, welcome back. Remember, though, that this session is indeed being recorded, and so if you miss something, you can go sometime in the future back in the past. And look at the things that you didn't hear or didn't see. So, we want academics value accurate information, truth. Truth in scholarship for teaching and learning, truth in research, and truth in service to society. We also value a broad interpretation of the information, i.e. ideas. This is good, this is bad, this is imperfect, this is right, this is wrong. And we want wide dissemination of the information, which we basically call publication. So, we also like academic freedom to be able to research and talk about what we think is important. And because academics train for a long period of time and should be saying occasionally things that the government or society doesn't want to hear, we like tenure, or in Athabasca University terms, term indefinite contract, to sort of support us to be able to say things that are not popular. Now, I'm going to go back in the past to 1970, to the first Athabasca University, before I was associated with the institution. This occurred between June 1970 and December 1972. Now, I have to turn a bit and look at the screen in order to get all of this information. I thought I could read backwards in my mirror better than I can. But I can't. So in June 25th, 1970, Athabasca University was established by an order in council by the Alberta Legislature. It was going to be a campus-based institution near what was then St. Albert, what is now St. Albert. However, a little more than a year later, two things happened. One, the social credit government that had been in power for 36 years were replaced by the new upstarts, the conservatives. And also enrollments at various universities, especially the University of Alberta, leveled off or actually declined. And so Peter Lougheed's conservative government was looking unfavorably at creating another institution when it might not be necessary. So what happened in between was that Tim Byrne, our original president or first president, was able to convince the conservative government that Athabasca University should not be abandoned, but actually revert to a distance education institution without a building, a capital cost, and with a whole pile of changes. So a pilot project was announced on the 30th of May, 1972. And so if you want to learn about the first university, these two books by Laurie Hughes and Tim Byrne are available in our libraries and in our archives. So this gets us to our first multiple choice question, basically. The University of Alberta was established on paper in 1906, but I believe is celebrating its centenary this year when it received its first students. University of Calgary was produced as a new university from a campus of the U of A in Calgary in 1966. A year later, University of Lethbridge was established. So it's quite easy to distinguish when our birthday was. I've given six choices here. The first order of council, but that was rescinded on the on the 8th of July, 1971. This is actually a bit of a legislature error because they were extending the term of the governing council members, but and they were cleaning up business by rescinding the previous motion that established Athabasca University. So even though Athabasca University continued, in legal terms, it was rescinded. So in some people's minds, that is not the university's birth date. But the 30th of May, the pilot project was announced, so that should be the birth date. Now, the second time Athabasca University was established legally was on this date with this particular order in council. So that could be the university's birthday. And then some people argue, well, until you get students, you're not a university. And it wasn't until October of 73 that we started getting students. And I don't know exactly the date of when that opened, but some people argue for that date. Then we got permanent status in 1975. Maybe that's the date. Then there was sod dredging for this building here in Athabasca in 82. Maybe that should be the date. Well, I think these three dates are all possibilities. So if you were guessing, you got 50-50 chance of getting it right. I'm quite amenable to discussion. Now, the first one, 1970, is used by us, but there are good arguments for saying it is not particularly great. Okay, so the second question, who was the first academic to work at Athabasca University or to work on courses? Courses is very important. All instructors know that the wording of the stem of the question is really important. So let's go to Lawrenson and Leggett were hired in the first Athabasca University, and they worked on curriculum and curriculum design, but not courses. A lot of people will pick Nathan Bakshi because he was supposedly the first academic, but that's wrong. And Joe Meeker and Ian Taylor were hired after Lochin, so they can't possibly be correct. So the answer is Barry Gilbert, who very few people have heard of, except those very, very old people associated with Athabasca University. And he was only hired for 3 months. It didn't work out. So now we're going to take you back in time to 1974, or ahead in time since we're going from 70 to 74. What was the world like? Well, the Vietnamese-American War was sort of over. There was a peace treaty signed in Paris, but the Americans weren't out until the following year. There was, in the United States, there was integration by forced busing. People like Solzhenitsyn were kicked out of the Soviet Union because of the writings, even though he was a Nobel Prize winner. This was the music scene. You can see that Elton John was a little bit younger in those days. Joni Mitchell had already gone south to the States, and Elvis was still alive, but more of a recluse in that time. When you were doing things like data entry, it meant typing and retyping from handwritten manuscripts. And cut and paste was done by an X-Acto knife with glue or with wax. And those are actual AU employees doing that work. And there were no personal computers. Steve Jobs and company had to wait a couple more years before the Apple came out. So in 1974, I was a graduate student doing my doctorate at Simon Fraser University, and had most of my thesis written, but not all of it. My senior supervisor was just about to leave for a year to Australia. My wife was pregnant with her first child. I was some ugly kid. Because of this was, in those days, pregnancy was a self-inflicted injury, and so you were kicked out of your job after a while, so Catherine was about to lose her position. because of rent controls, we've been forced out of our house and we're living out of boxes in my great aunt's place. I had to start paying back my student loans, and I'd run out of scholarship money and TA money, so I was looking for a job. This ad came up. And I applied for this position in this fly-by-night institution and thought, well, we'll see what happens. So this is actually my letter of application. I still had it. I couldn't believe it. So what was the title? If you saw the advertisement, you should get it, right? I gave you a whole pile of choices, but the answer is tutors. Every academic at Athabasca University at the beginning was tutors, and the full-time tutors became course coordinators in about 77, 78. So prior to that time, we were all tutors. Now, who was our first professor, right? This is also an interesting question. Well, the answer is David Suzuki, because we gave him an honorary professorship. We didn't give an honorary doctorate, but we gave him an honorary professorship. And about that time, or very shortly after, Joe Meeker somehow negotiated being an interdisciplinary professor. And so I'd accept either of those answers. So the professors used for the general rabble was not until at least 1981, and it wasn't in the calendar until 86, 87. So we've been professors for a fairly short period of time. Lo and behold, after I wrote my letter in July, they said, come for an interview. And this is my sort of letter of offer. Here's a little bit of a close-up of it. I was going to be offered this fantastic, I was going to be starting on the 1st of September or sooner, and I arrived sooner. I arrived about 3 or 4 days before the end of August, and I've never been paid for that yet. I was going to get this fantastic sum of $14,000 a year, and I had a one-year contract. And I had lots of fringe benefits. I believe I had Alberta Healthcare, 10% of my salary for benefits, of other benefits like pension and things like that, and a whole 1 month on vacation. So there were 26 or 28 applications, and I got hired, and I always wondered why. But it could have been because I had an ecological background and they were working on an ecological course. It could be because I had a fair amount of teaching experience, because that's how I paid for my undergraduate and my graduate education for the most part. I'd actually taken a correspondence course, Latin, for 4 years in high school, which very few academics at Athabasca have ever taken any distance education courses prior to coming here. I had written a script for a video on ecology that had never seen the light of day, and yes, I was cheap. $14,000 that I was getting was less money than the three part-time people I replaced. So what was I getting myself into? Here most of the people in 1974 that formed the university. So we were in this pilot project. We had to produce courses, get students, and really those courses had to get some kind of transfer or credit transfer to other institutions. There were three unfinished courses, World Ecology, the Scientific Context. I was under the impression it was done and I was supposed to deliver it. When I came, 8 of the 24 units were only done. And Ancient Roots in the Modern World and Introduction to the Study of Human Communities, a social science course. So that's what it was like. My little job was to personally deliver the course to 300 students and make it as an individual sort of thing, produce courses, and anything else the president wanted me to do. It could have meant that sweeping the floors was part of the job. So here's World Ecology, how it would be set up for a typical student. This is what we call we had printed materials that we produced ourselves, audio tape instruction, and telephone tutoring. and this is all of the course materials for that course. It was what we call a ground-up course. That doesn't mean hamburger, but starting from ground zero and working up, rather than what we basically do today, which is wraparound courses around already published textbooks. So we retained a fair amount of what we do in distance education today from that era of time. And I won't go through all of those things, but one of the things that was the multiple enrollment dates, you could enroll any day, and now we've cut that drastically back to 12 times a year. Well, we've dropped several things that didn't work out. So we had no deadlines for students, and of course adult students don't need deadlines, they'll complete at their own pace, but that didn't quite work. We had a pass-fail system until we found out that transferring credits, the students got a pass, and that's it. And they didn't get a high mark, even though our mark was supposed to be about 75 or 80%. We had one module credits, so Build Ecology had six modules plus an optional Field Ecology workshop, so seven credits, seven exams. We did field testing with fake students to begin with. We had pre- and post-tests for everything. We had local course tutors, so not only are you a telephone tutor, you were a telephone tutor in Peace River for Peace River students. We had small group discussions. We had learning resource centers, i.e. libraries scattered around the province, etc. All of those things are essentially dropped. So we get to this question, what was the first course completed? Aha! Not World Ecology. It was Ancient Roots of the Modern World. That was Joe Meeker bragged about that he didn't have an instructional designer, and so that was maybe part of the reason. So here's Athabasca University's headquarters for 14515 122nd Avenue when I joined. That was our first real building. There was previous rented buildings, but this was a given to us rent free. It was built on at the back later on, but that was later. This was an infamous building that the academics were housed in this warehouse building for about a year. This is our next building. We still kept the first building, but this was another building that we had that a number of people moved into. And this was another building where our first lab was. So if we get to the next multiple choice question, the what was the building where the academics were housed in 76, 77, which you can hardly hear yourself talk on the phone when the furnaces cut in and whatnot, was the TUB, the temporary university building that was named by Roach and Bakshi, and I think kept us in that building for a shorter period of time than it would have been otherwise than calling it the TUB. So, where was our first lab? Well, it was in 1982 in that last building that I showed you a photograph of. We, Joan Coy, our first chemist, and myself, sort of persevered and got some money and built a lab in the basement of that building, probably an illegal structure, but it was there. So it is not, our lab here in Athabasca is the second lab. And I just threw this in, the first internal newsletter that became AU Insider, that was just a reverse thing inside Athabasca University. And it was done by whom? It was done by support staff members. So I wanted to point out that some support staff have indeed made changes to the university that are very long-lasting. So it was Ellen Kierstead who developed AU Insider in the beginning. What was Able? Now, I like the name. But it was an old university newspaper for our students. So in 1979, about 5 years after I'd started with AU, I was getting tired of AU personal squabbles and office politics and misplaced priorities and inefficiencies, and I was going to quit. But we did have research and study leave. So I stuck it out another year, and I went down to Canada Agriculture Research Station in Lethbridge, worked on grasshoppers for a year. So what did I find there? There's no squabbles, office politics, etc. So I thought, maybe Athabasca University is not that bad after all. So I stuck around a little bit. So here we come to the relocation. While I was in Lethbridge, there were rumors that we were going to move to a small town. And the rumors were squashed. The universities went and said, hey, because of Edmonton's transportation for getting people in, because the University of Alberta's library, because we're using commercial people for storing our course materials and printing and whatnot, we shouldn't move. And the rumors were squashed, supposedly. During this time, President Sam Smith had entertained the idea of joining us, becoming part of the University of Alberta's, I think it's Faculty of Extension that it was at that time. And but he decided that we should be better on our own. But then there was the announcement. What happened is one morning the president was told to see the Minister of Advanced Education immediately, and Sam Smith went there, and the Minister of Advanced Education said, this afternoon it is going to be announced that your headquarters are moving to the town of Athabasca. So because of this lack of university autonomy and lack of consultation, the president resigned, and the chairman of the governing council resigned. And after some time of work and whatnot, we moved to the town of Athabasca. Oops, I went too far. So this was part of the government's decentralization process. We weren't the only ones. The other correspondence schools moved to Barrhead, and what became the Alberta Environmental Research Center moved to Vegreville. So my multiple choice question, which I gave the answer, was quite an easy one, but somebody got it wrong. Donna, if you're there. Because who of our past presidents had the shortest term? And it was, of course, Sam Smith, who resigned because of the announcement of the move. He didn't complete his five-year term. Everyone else completed five-year terms or 2 5-year terms. So some of our successes, I think our greatest success are the tens of thousands of students who we've helped in various ways, learning things or getting credentials that help them on with their lives. And our system of education, I think, is quite good with learning at your own place and your own pace. So those things, I won't go into them in detail. Everybody knows these. Various administrative things that we do with our course materials and how we operate registrations and whatnot. I also think the formation of a staff association was very important because university administration was running roughshod over staff at various times for probably economic reasons, but also for ideological reasons. In the sciences area, I have to do a little bit of bragging since I'm from science. We've created more science courses with lab components than anyone else other than the British Open University. And that's pretty good for a small institution. There's other places that offer lots of science courses, but usually they don't have labs. We do excellent outreach work like our chemistry magic shows and whatnot, and we established our small laboratory, which is rather unusual for a distance education institution. And this is a photograph of our laboratory that was established in Athabasca after 3 major renovations. And we, of course, do teaching, research, and service in this place. But even that is too small, and we've had to expand out in the hall with this display case, and we need to go other places as well. One of the things that we always have a thing is who watches the watchers. All of us are watched by someone else because they're untrustworthy, of course. But you have to be careful of this sort of thing. And one night I was working late here, and I went into the lab to deposit something, and just before I went home, and all the lights were off in the lab, but there was somebody at the fume hood with a balance, weighing out something that turned out probably to be an illegal substance of some description. He had keys to all of the operations, so he could easily get in there. The door was unlocked. And so I reported this, and we eventually got an RCMP camera established in the lab for a period of time, which I don't even think Elaine knows about. You can look for the hole in the wall there. So, I talking about sciences, I had to put in a few questions. What department name was never used for encompassing the science people? And Department of Science is the only one that has not been used. If you remember my original thing, the first one was the Department of Environmental Sciences. That's what I joined in 1974. So, who acted as the first dean of science? Again, look at the basal part of the multiple choice question. The answer is Don Cavill. What happened is Kate Naylor was hired as the first dean, but before she came, Don acted as dean of science, and after Kate Naylor, Don acted as dean of science. But then it was Garth Edwards and it was David Rollins, and that's when we ended the Faculty of Science. So what was the first employee association? Well, it was the staff association, and that included all staff, support staff, janitorial staff, academic staff, professional staff, but it didn't last for very long. The professional and academic staff moved into the Faculty Association, and the support staff got into AUPE. What is the age for mandatory retirement? Of course, it's 65, just the common thing. But when did Tim Byrne retire? When he was first president? Well, he started his five-year term when he was 64. Mm-hmm. So he was around 69. I don't know the exact date, so those are approximate. But he was 69 when he retired. Regrets and disappointments. Yes, I've had a few. One of it is how few students really want to learn, and how many students just want credentials and will do anything, including cheating, to get them. And our poor procedures for dealing with them. I won't go into that because it's depressing. Well, we've had other things dealing with various things of how we work with our course systems and whatnot. And these are battles that I've fought again and again and lost. And various things dealing with research and whatnot. I really regret that CUPE was established, because the university really mistreated tutors for a long period of time, and Alpha was not in a position to actually absorb the tutors and help them. And so they joined CUPE, which caused no end of trouble with all kinds of things with the institution. Some more things I won't go into. And more things. My biggest disappointment, though, is that AU Athabasca is not AU Central for the academics. This loss of familiarity leads to loss of trust, or if you want, loss of collegiality. That means loss of interdepartmental contacts that we used to have before. And I think loss of loyalty to AU, because if you're working in your research at the University of Calgary, Who are the people you work with on a face-to-face basis, and who are you loyal most to? Well, your colleagues that you see. So in 1973, 75% of the science academics were in or around Athabasca. 2 years later, it dropped to 25%. I am now the only one lonely. So AU, the perfect university. No students, no academics, all administrators. Okay, I've said this many times. AU loves the title university, but sometimes I think that too many of our staff don't know what a university is, and some of them are academics. For example, we should distinguish between what a university is and what a business is. A university, in effect, says, "Well, I have some information or I have an idea, and here it is for free to anyone who wants it." A business says, "Hey, I've got a little bit of information, I've got some product, and I will sell you a bit, but not the whole thing, because I want to keep control." So this leads to a number of things. Students, I think, should be students and not clients or customers. We should have academic plans and financial plans, not business plans. We should be very transparent in all of our interactions and whatnot, etc. I won't go on. But here's in the same thing. We like the term university, but we often act like an anti-academic institution. More than one senior administrator has thought that academics should be only piece workers and only employed part-time and not given continuing contracts. And staff equivalent to professors in other institutions were and are called tutors and course coordinators. I think course coordinators is a very demeaning term for academics. We've established fairly recently academic coordinator positions that don't have any research functions, which makes us more like a college than a university. And academic freedom has been impinged upon by several senior administrators many, many times. So let's go back to academic freedom. It's a two-sided coin. One, it's an academic's prerogative to do what research and publish and talk about whatever they think is important. On the other hand, it's a responsibility to make informed comments on institutional and public matters. So I'm going to give you a bonus question. If you got one of the previous questions wrong, you get this one right, you can cross off the wrong one. How many times has my academic freedom been impinged upon by AU administrators? You've got five choices. Never, once, two or three. That's the next one. Four or five, many. Of course, the answer should be never. Well, why am I asking this question? Well, the president once asked a colleague and I not to publish a paper on one of our courses right at the very beginning. And It eventually got published after a long delay, and if anybody wants to know about world ecology, this is the paper. A vice president academic once overruled an editor. I'd been asked to write an article on plagiarism for one of the university publications, and the editor toned it down considerably, and then it was overruled for publication. So I went to the student newspaper, and they accepted it in the original form, which was a lot more pointed than that is available. And the Dean of Science once told me, in effect, don't work with any professional colleagues because it's not good for you and shouldn't do that. So eventually it got done, and it was presented at one of these lunch and learns last year. So the answer is two or three times. That's not bad over a 30-year period, but still, I'm not the only one. So I've learned a lot of lessons while I've been with Athabasca. This is one I like the best. John Lennon is the original. I couldn't get the exact quote, but this is close to it. Life is what happens when you're climbing other things. But there's other adages that proved all too true. And I'll just skip through this. Again, remember, you can go into the past by going into the future. So here's some more and more I like this pessimist, and he says, things can't get any worse. The optimist says, yes, they can. We should thank the colleagues more often than we do and what I do, but that never happens. Mutual respect should be our first priority, but sometimes doesn't happen. And colleagues are like our extended family. Like, I can't do anything about who in the world is in my extended family, and usually I can't do anything about who are my colleagues. And so you got to live with what you get. Oh, there'll always be clashes between uniformity and individualism. For example, computing services doesn't like Macs, never has, doesn't want them, and whatnot. And yet, various people, for various reasons, say, I want a Mac, and or an Apple, and have used them, and whatnot. We have this all the time. Academics, well, this is mostly for academics. When we travel to conferences, it took me a long time to figure out, I should stay 2 or 3 or 4 days later after the conference and find out about the local people and whatnot. It makes life so much better. And if you take your sabbaticals, do like I did the first time and not the other times, and go away. We hire often academics who are great researchers and don't have any teaching experience or background, and it's proven very, very difficult. I really think search committees could have a minimum of 5 people, a maximum of 7. I've been on a search committee with 3, and I've been on a search committee with more than a dozen, neither one of which work. And we're going to run into failures. If we're trying something new, unless we're very lucky, or we're going to run into things that don't work, and we should tolerate that within our institution. And of course, Michael knows this one. You can buy academics, credentials especially. So, from a student point of view, you can't, an art appreciation course does not make you an artist, and a science course without labs doesn't make you a scientist. Okay, so the fourth objective, the last objective, 2 extreme scenarios. This is a bit pessimistic about Athabasca College. Less than 10% of the students enrolled in degree programs. All of our courses delivered at a distance, so there are no in-person components whatsoever in anything. All academics are peace workers at home. All research involving equipment is done at other institutions. We have a few elite administrators who offer credential business. Each year of your age, this is where FLAR gets out of hand. You're just given an experiential credit. And AU Athabasca becomes a shopping mall. So, the other side of the coin, which may be a bit pie in the sky, is that greater than 70% of our students are registered in degree programs and are working full-time on them. Also that we have students who go right through from the beginning to end with us. That around 85% or less of our courses are distance education completely, but there's about 15% that are delivered with some kind of face-to-face or other kind of components that aren't distance education. We have a semester system for low enrollment courses, especially in the higher years. We have a large campus in Edmonton with offices for everyone and maybe some teaching space and lab space. Most of our academics are full-time professors and make a community of scholars. And the Alberta Teaching Association recognizes distance education and we start to offer a B.Ed. And AU is recognized as a peer within the province. So, we're getting towards the end. Who do I owe lunch to? Is there anybody who got all but one right? Or all correct first? I don't think so. Is there any hands at the Illuminate people, or are they caught up? Anybody with one wrong or one incorrect? As a teacher, I shouldn't say you're wrong, you're incorrect. too incorrect. I don't want anybody lunch if you got three incorrect. Anybody? Close. Yeah, this is a cheater over here with five people cooperating. I should buy a lunch anyway. I'll buy a lunch anyway. Sometimes wives do need husbands to buy them lunch. Okay. Questions and comments. I am open to anything you want to say.
Can you use the mic, please, so
we can catch it on the room, Nate? Robert, you seem to feel that 70% of the students should be seeking a degree at Athanasca University, 70% or more. Is that good for students? Well, I think it's good for university. I think right now if more than, I don't know what our figures are right now, but if we're just supplying first and second year courses to everybody under the sun, we're a college. And that doesn't mean that we have lots of course equivalent students who are taking one or two courses, but our bigger section is the students who are with us for a long period of time. Otherwise, I can't see us having senior level courses and degrees. I think right now we are serving as a college primarily rather than a university because those students are only with us for one or two courses. That's, you know, but again, that's pie in the sky. Like, reality is going to be somewhere between those two scenarios.
Well, that's what I was thinking about the students themselves. I came to believe that the students are better to take courses from us if they are able to get a degree from a conventional university and at least sit in some classrooms.
Yeah, some students are that way. But again, I'm looking at the institution. Anybody online to raise a hand or a voice or telephone? We don't have a telephone.
There's a comment from Rob Carmichael. Did you hear that U of A is waiving mandatory retirement? Have you heard this? What do you think about it?
I haven't heard it. They were talking about it, but I don't know if it's happened as of yet. And from my point of view, one of the things I learned at a meeting that I attended with deans of science is that if you have an annual assessment process, which we do, which is a good annual assessment process, everybody goes through it, it's taken seriously, there's no reason why an arbitrary retirement date should be in effect. You have an annual assessment and you can say that after 65 that if you get one unsatisfactory you're out rather than any kind of negotiations that we have right now. But we have a mechanism in place. But I think mandatory retirement is going to go by the by in the next 5 years. Anybody else?
I was just going to make a comment on George's comments on the students. Is from my experience, it was actually the opposite of what you mentioned. Is like I did the classroom experience of the first 2 years at the intro level courses, and then when I got to the senior level courses, I transferred over to U because I thought U of L's computer science department was garbage. I didn't like their courses. So what I did is I got a freebie. My dad happens to work here. And I got a free course and I took one of Peter Holt's C programming courses and then I said, forget it. I looked at the program, took a couple more courses and then I was going at U of L at the same time and then I quit and I transferred all the courses over. So it was actually the opposite of what you were saying. It's like I took the intro courses in the classroom, which I thought was good, and then later when you get to the senior level, especially in computing science, you can do it on your own. So, I was just going to comment on that. Like, if you want full-time students getting degrees, you could actually do the opposite. Why not transfer over to AU instead of transfer to U of L or whatever?
So, in other words, I filled the audience with my family members. Okay, if there are no more questions, it is, well, we have one here coming up on text or by.
Hi, Robert. Are you making this point power presentation available for us to look at with more more attention?
I'm sorry, your message was a little bit garbled. You wanted me to look at what in more attention? Please repeat.
The presentation afterwards, if somebody cleared that for the better years than mine, all of these lunch and learns that are done through Illuminate are available later on. Also, if people want, they can email me and I can send them a PowerPoint presentation. So you get the PowerPoint presentation without the verbal. But and it's posted on the research site, so that'll be fun. So if that's the questions, I've got an academic ending that you can read here. But I said that there were four parts to this presentation, and now we'll go into the epilogue with this cartoon that used without permission. It's a Gary Larson cartoon, and if people can't read it, I'll read it out here, but I've got to turn here. Today, our guest lecturer has been Dr. Clarence Tibbs, whose 20-year career has culminated in his recent autobiography, Zoo Vet, I Quit. And of course, you can see that Clarence is a little bit worse for wear. And so am I. So I brought you this after 30 years of passive working, and I announced my retirement at the end of this year.